11th. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Jill Robbins, and John Russell. Later, Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first,
the U.S. Supreme Court ruled Thursday that a New York law requiring a special reason to carry a gun in public is unconstitutional. The decision represents a major expansion of gun rights in states with similar laws. It also comes when there is political division over the issue of gun laws and concerns over gun violence. The court's 6-3 decision follows recent mass shootings in such places as an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, and a food store in Buffalo, New York. The ruling also was issued as the U.S. Congress is working on legislation dealing with guns. Justice Clarence Thomas wrote for the majority. He said that the U.S. Constitution protects an individual's right to carry a handgun for self-defense outside the home. The majority of justices struck down a New York law requiring people to show a proper cause or specific need in order to get a permit to carry a gun in public. The justices said the requirement violates the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms and the 14th Amendment. Justice Stephen Breyer and two other justices disagreed with the majority's ruling. He wrote, "Since the start of this year alone, there have already been 277 reported mass shootings, an average of more than one per day." New York Governor Kathy Hochul, who is a member of the Democratic Party, said the court's decision comes at a painful time. She said the state is still mourning the deaths of 10 people in a mass shooting at a Buffalo-area food store. She called the decision reprehensible, meaning it is something that should be criticized. She also said, "It's not what New Yorkers want." American President Joe Biden, also a Democrat, said, "This ruling contradicts both common sense and the Constitution, and should deeply trouble us all." He added that after the shootings in Buffalo and Uvalde, we must do more as a society, not less, to protect our fellow Americans. Wayne LaPierre is a leader of the gun rights organization National Rifle Association. He called the court's decision a win for good men and women all across America. He said in a statement, "The right to self-defense and to defend your family and loved ones should not end at your home." New York's law has been in place since 1913. Under the law's proper cause requirement, people seeking an unrestricted concealed carry permit must show a need for self-defense. State officials also gave restricted licenses to carry a weapon for specific purposes such as hunting, target shooting, or going to and from their place of business. Firearms safety groups and gun control activists feared that a ruling against New York's law would lead to more guns on the streets and higher rates of violent crime. They feared that such a ruling could endanger bans on guns in sensitive places such as airports, courthouses, hospitals, and schools. The ruling is the High Court's first major gun decision in more than 10 years. It affects Americans living in several states, including California, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. These states have similar laws to New York's. The Supreme Court last issued a major gun decision in 2010. In that decision, and also in a ruling in 2008, the justices confirmed a nationwide right to keep a gun at home for self-defense. In Thursday's decision, the court expanded the right to carry a gun outside the home. The court's decision to expand gun rights comes as gun laws are a hotly disputed political issue. A Pew Research Center study in 2021 found that over half of Americans, 53%, say gun laws should be stricter than they are currently. The study said that opinion was held by 81% of Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents. But only 20% of Republicans and Republican supporters agreed.
The World Health Organization held an emergency meeting Thursday over the worldwide spread of monkeypox. The health agency is considering whether to declare the outbreak a global health emergency, but critics say the WHO is only deciding to act because the disease has spread to the West from Africa. The declaration means the WHO considers the monkeypox outbreak to be an extraordinary event and that the disease is at risk of spreading to more countries. Many scientists doubt any declaration would help slow the disease. Developed countries recording the most recent cases are already moving quickly to shut down the spread. Last week, WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus called the recent spread of monkeypox unusual and concerning. It has been identified in more than 40 countries, mostly in Europe. Monkeypox has sickened people for many years in Central and West Africa, where one version of the disease there kills up to 10% of people. Outside of Africa, no deaths have been reported. Oyewale Tomori is a Nigerian virologist who advises several WHO groups. He was critical of the WHO for organizing a meeting only after the disease appeared in Europe. If WHO was really worried about monkeypox spread, they could have convened their emergency committee years ago when it reemerged in Nigeria in 2017, he said. Until last month, monkeypox had not caused large outbreaks beyond Africa, and scientists have not found any major genetic changes in the virus. A leading advisor to WHO said last month that the increase of cases in Europe was likely tied to sexual activity among gay and bisexual men at two music festivals in Spain and Belgium. People with monkeypox often experience symptoms like fever, body aches, and a rash. Most recover within weeks without needing medical care. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has confirmed more than 3,300 cases of monkeypox in 42 countries where the virus has not been typically seen. More than 80% of cases are in Europe. Meanwhile, Africa has already seen more than 1,400 cases this year, including 62 deaths. David Fidler is a health expert at the Council on Foreign Relations. He said WHO's new attention towards monkeypox during its spread beyond Africa could worsen the divide between rich and poor countries seen during the COVID-19 pandemic. He added that it was unclear if Africans even wanted monkeypox vaccines, given the danger of more common diseases like malaria and HIV. Unless African governments specifically ask for vaccines, it might be a bit patronizing to send them, because it's in the West's interest to stop monkeypox from being exported, Fidler said. In January 2020, the WHO declared that COVID-19 was an international emergency. But few countries took notice until March, when the organization described it as a pandemic, weeks after other health organizations had already done so. The WHO was later criticized for its response throughout the pandemic, which may have created a quicker response to monkeypox, experts say. Salim Abdul Karim is a disease expert with the University of KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa. He said the WHO and others should be doing more to stop monkeypox from spreading around the world, but he did not think an emergency declaration would help much. He said Africa knows how to handle diseases like monkeypox. Maybe they need vaccines in Europe to stop monkeypox, but here, we have been able to control it with very simple measures, Abdul Karim added. I'm Dan Novak.
A bloodhound named Trumpet won the Westminster Kennel Club dog show on Wednesday night. The prize marks the first time that the dog breed, known for its sense of smell, has been honored. The show recognizes dogs with the best qualities of their kind or breed. Trumpet took the top dog prize in a competition including more than 3,000 dogs from 200 breeds. Other finalists included a French bulldog, a German shepherd, a Maltese, an English setter, a Samoyed, and a Lakeland Terrier. Heather Helmer is Trumpet's breeder and owner. "I was shocked," she said. "The competition was tough," she added, "and sometimes I feel the bloodhound is a bit of an underdog." After making dog show history, Trumpet sat patiently for picture after picture taken by reporters. Then he started to do what bloodhounds do best: sniff or smell the scents around him. The bloodhound is a breed known for its ability to find lost or hiding people by their scent. Trumpet examined some flowers that had been set up for pictures in the winner's area, but did not appear to find anything of note. Winston, a French bulldog co-owned by NFL football player Morgan Fox, took second in the dog show. "I'm just so proud of him and the whole team," Fox said in a text message after the show. The competition is usually held during the winter at New York City's Madison Square Garden. The show was moved to the Lyndhurst Building in Tarrytown, 40 kilometers north of the city, last year and this year because of the coronavirus pandemic. I'm Jill Robbins.
Recent Everyday Grammar story, we asked our listeners and online fans to tell us about their favorite books. We received many wonderful messages from our audience around the world. Thanks to all for the great exchange. In today's report, we will take a close look at one of these notes. Language teacher Orhan wrote to us from Iran, where he teaches Turkish. Orhan described an important day and an important book in his life. he wrote,
"I am Orhan from Iran. When I was 20 years old, I was visiting my father's family in Tabriz that I saw my cousin was reading a book in Turkish."
We suggest removing that and breaking the sentence into two shorter statements. The sentence could also use the simple past, visited instead of was visiting. The updated sentence could be something like this.
When I was 20 years old, I visited my father's family in Tabriz and saw my cousin reading a book in Turkish.
Orhan's next line gives more details about why the Turkish book interested him.
Despite being millions of Turkish-speaking people in Iran, our mother language, Turkish, is not formal, and there is not schools that teach in Turkish. So I didn't see a Turkish book until that day.
We suggest breaking the sentence into shorter individual sentences and then reordering the ideas. Let's put the sentence, "I had never seen a Turkish book before that day," first. It flows well from the ending of the sentence just before, "and saw my cousin reading a book in Turkish." There are a few grammatical changes we might make as well. For example, "there is not schools" should be "there are no schools." We also suggest replacing despite with although. The updated sentences might go like this.
I had never seen a Turkish book before that day. Although there are millions of Turkish speakers in Iran, Turkish is not an official language. There are no schools that teach in Turkish.
Orhan then wrote,
"Based on my request, my cousin gave me that Turkish book."
The sentence could be simplified to the following.
My cousin gave me that Turkish book.
Then Orhan explained the effect the book had on his life.
I learned grammar of Turkish by reading that book and interested in Turkish literature, so I went to Turkey to study Turkish literature.
We suggest using Turkish grammar instead of grammar of Turkish. The updated sentences might go like this.
I learned Turkish grammar by reading that book. I became interested in Turkish literature, so I went to Turkey to study the subject.
Orhan ends his piece with,
"That thin book is my favorite book and changed my whole life."
The ending words, "changed my whole life," are the most important. They could stand as their own sentence, as in,
"That thin book is my favorite book. It changed my whole life."
Here is Orhan's message with our suggested changes.
I am Orhan from Iran. When I was 20 years old, I visited my father's family in Tabriz and saw my cousin reading a book in Turkish. I had never seen a Turkish book before that day. Although there are millions of Turkish speakers in Iran, Turkish is not an official language. There are no schools that teach in Turkish. My cousin gave me that Turkish book. I learned Turkish grammar by reading it. I became interested in Turkish literature, so I went to Turkey to study the subject. That thin book is my favorite book. It changed my whole life.
We thank Orhan for his message and wish him continued success in his teaching and in his English studies. If you would like to receive writing advice, write us a short message of 4 to 6 sentences. Talk about your favorite movie, when you saw it, what it means to you. Maybe your message will be chosen for our next exploration of writing on Everyday Grammar. I'm John Russell.
Today, we visit one of the most unusual national parks in the United States. It is called the Dry Tortugas National Park. It includes 7 small islands. They are about 200 kilometers off the coast of the state of Florida. One of the islands was once a prison. The first European to see the small islands was the Spanish explorer Ponce de León. He arrived by ship in 1513. Ponce de León was an older man who was searching for special water that stories said would make him young again. It was called the Fountain of Youth. Ponce de León named the islands the Tortugas. Tortuga is the Spanish word for turtle. Thousands of turtles lived on the islands. Ponce de León was able to capture many of these creatures to provide meat for his ship's crew. He never did find the Fountain of Youth. In fact, the islands had no fresh water on them at all. The tortugas were dry. The word dry began to appear on early maps of the area to warn ships that they could not find fresh water there. Centuries later, America's third president, Thomas Jefferson, took an interest in the islands. He hoped they could become a place that could help protect ships traveling in a large area of water called the Florida Straits. He proposed a military base be built there. In 1821, the United States took control of Florida and its islands. Construction of a military fort began in 1848, long after Jefferson's death. The fort was to be the home of 1,500 men and 450 huge cannons. The fort's name? Fort Jefferson. Fort Jefferson was never really completed. It had to be worked on continually. The salt air, wind, water, and sand quickly caused problems. The weight of the fort's heavy brick walls made them sink into the sand. Slaves and prisoners did the building and repair work at the fort. Many of the prisoners were army troops. They had been found guilty of crimes and ordered to serve their sentences at Fort Jefferson. In July of 1865, 4 new prisoners arrived at Fort Jefferson. They had been found guilty of taking part in the successful plot to murder the President of the U.S., Abraham Lincoln. One of the prisoners was sentenced for giving medical aid to the man who killed President Lincoln. He was also found guilty of being an active member of the assassination plot. That man was Samuel Alexander Mudd. He was a 32-year-old doctor from the state of Maryland. He was sentenced to spend the rest of his life doing hard labor at Fort Jefferson. The walls at Fort Jefferson were about 15 meters tall. Inside the walls of the fort were hundreds of rooms. Most of them held guns that pointed out to the sea. Many other buildings were also inside the huge fort. No prisoner had ever successfully escaped from Fort Jefferson. It was more than 200 kilometers across open ocean to the nearest occupied land. Samuel Alexander Mudd must have believed the fort would be his home for the rest of his life. But he was wrong. In 1867, Dr. Mudd was helping the prison doctor treat victims of yellow fever. Many people died from yellow fever. Soon, the prison doctor lost his own battle with the disease. Only Dr. Mudd was left to treat the increasing number of men who became sick with yellow fever. Later, the sickness seemed to leave the island. Many of those who survived knew they owed their lives to Dr. Mudd. Almost every man in Fort Jefferson wrote to the President of the United States, asking that Mudd be pardoned because of his work treating patients with yellow fever. They called Mudd a hero. In February of 1869, President Andrew Johnson signed a presidential pardon. Mudd was a free man. He left Fort Jefferson and returned to his home in Maryland. He once again became a family doctor. In 1874, the American Army left Fort Jefferson. Modern artillery made the fort no longer useful. Today, the old fort and empty little islands provide a protected home for thousands of birds, fish, and sea turtles. Visitors travel for hours on high-speed boats that bring them to the islands from Key West, Florida. They swim in the warm waters and enjoy the bright Florida sun. Many try snorkeling or scuba diving to explore the underwater shipwrecks. Still others bring tents and spend a few days living on the white sand beaches. Thousands of visitors make the trip to the Dry Tortugas National Park every year. Of course, soldiers no longer greet them when they arrive at Fort Jefferson. Now, friendly members of the National Park Service do. They meet every boat filled with visitors. They smile and say, "Welcome to Fort Jefferson and the Dry Tortugas National Park." The small island's days as a prison are long past. Yet, almost every visitor to the park asks about its most famous prisoner, Dr. Samuel Alexander Mudd. They ask to see his room. Most people know that the doctor did not end up spending the rest of his life in the Fort Jefferson prison. Only a few of the huge cannons remain at the park. They help show visitors what the old fort looked like. The weather continues to affect the fort's grounds and buildings, so workers continue to fight against environmental damage. The park extends over an area of more than 26,000 hectares. Almost all of this is ocean and living coral reefs that protect the islands. Many ships have sunk in the waters around the islands over the centuries. The wrecks of these ships help provide safe places for many fish. Thousands of kinds of fish live in these waters. Some visitors are even lucky enough to see sea turtles swimming in the clear blue waters. Dry Tortugas is also home to many seabirds. Visitors are not permitted on some of the islands within the park to protect birds that are laying eggs. The striking natural beauty and relaxed feel of the islands today seems far different from Dry Tortugas' earlier history as a lonely, inescapable prison.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.